Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour tutorial video. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and editorial review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide over the internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on heavy metals when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think is wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools. They're banned from our public institutions, and they've been banned now from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. And they teach these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions. You know, we've made them a part of our national psyche. And this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Now, are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? Now, that's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and they advocated the Ten Commandments. They even put 22 principles of that law into our Constitution. And there's still one school left in America, at least, that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty. You do not have to know what the penalty is to suffer from its effect. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, Natural Law, or Karma, or something else, it's automatic. And it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which is the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at area code 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we've been talking about this thing called heavy metals. And throughout the series on heavy metals, we are constantly faced and confronted with incompetence on the part of the Food and Drug Administration and the CDC, or the Center for Disease Control. So we're faced with this dilemma. Either one, these people are totally incompetent and can't protect us from the heavy metals that are in our environment, in our food, and in our air and water and so on. Or else they are competent, but there's some other agenda, there's some other reason why they're not acting. Is it ignorance? They don't know? Well, boys and girls, I'm not a Rhodes Scholar, I'm not a scientist, and I'm not a famous hunter-gatherer, you know, like from the New York Times or from the Washington Post, you know, an investigative reporter, you know, with credentials, you know, that go back many years, and I've discovered the Nixon tapes, or I've gone out and discovered some great new story, you know, for you to chew on. I'm just an average Joe Sixpack over here, but as I read through the literature, I have to say to myself, there's something here. There's something bigger here than meets the eyeball. So I pointed out, for instance, we were talking about this thimerosal. Now, the other day, the airlines were closed down for about 4 or 5 days while they grounded airplanes and checked them for safety violations. No airplane crashed. Nobody was killed. Nobody was injured. But there was a violation of some FAA rule. And in order to be safe, you know, better be safe than sorry, they grounded all these airplanes for a week, and it just tied up traffic here in the United States, something fierce. The airlines were complaining. Passengers were complaining. And it was really minor. It was just a difference between putting some safety straps on some hoses so that they wouldn't chafe. Wasn't going to make any great amount of difference one way or the other for a week or 10 days. They could have done those airplanes one at a time, slowly but surely, but they didn't. Now, why is it that we're so concerned about airline safety, but we're not at all concerned about heavy metal poisoning or about iatrogenic disease, which kills 300,000 people a year by their own admission? I mean, we're not killing 300,000 people a year in airline crashes. But we are killing 300,000 people a year, and the CDC and the FDC and everybody admits it, knows it, and understands it, but they're not doing anything about it, and so it raises a question in my mind that why not? Well, we're ignorant and we don't know. No, but we've already discovered that this week. These people are not ignorant. These people are publishing these facts and figures. In fact, most of the information I gave this week came from the FDA and the CDC. They're fully informed. They know all of this. There isn't anything I told you here this week that anybody there with the government or with the Congress does not already know about heavy metals. We know that we're putting aluminum in the baking powder. Hell, I know that. You know that now. And so does the CDC and everybody else. And they all know that aluminum is causing Alzheimer's disease and neurological defects, and they don't do anything to change it. They don't do anything to stop it. They'll go out here and ground the airliners over here over a safety rule. You'd think, you know, just to be safe, we would take thimerosal out of the vaccines, at least for a trial period of a year, to see if that was the cause of autism. Nobody's even suggested it, much less done it. So I pointed that out. I said, you know, all you can do is just go around the world someplace, find a group of people, 10, 20, 30,000 people that aren't being vaccinated, and take a look at their autism rate, and that'll tell you the story. Now, they haven't done that. In fact, they've gone out of their way to obfuscate the issue, to come up with excuses. And so it should raise in our minds a question as to why. What's the motivation? Because this is damaging, it is killing, it is harming millions of people, not just here in the United States, but worldwide. Is there a reason for that? Is there a reason that maybe you and I hadn't heard of before? And I'm here to tell you the other is. The other is. In a book called The 13th Tribe by Kessler, he points out that we all know how terrifically Jesus Christ denounced the Pharisees. Christ said that the Pharisees nullified all of the commandments of God by their tradition, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. He said that in Mark 7, verse 13, and Matthew 15, verses 6 through 9. Christ's invective in truth cannot be equaled. All of Matthew 23 is like a whiplash. He likened Phariseeism to a whited sepulcher, indeed beautiful outwardly, but inside full of dead men's bones and of all uncleanness. He climaxed one condemnation after another with the expletive hypocrites. He called the Pharisees children of them that killed the prophets. He foretold that they would go on killing, crucifying, and persecuting until the guilt for all of the righteous blood shed from Abel on down would be upon them. I'm going to underline that. This is the Messiah himself. He foretold how that the Pharisees would go on killing. Not that when he died, it would stop. He said he foretold that they would go on killing, crucifying, and persecuting until the guilt for all of the righteous bloodshed from Adam on to the end of the age would be upon them. He said, you serpents, you generation of vipers, how can you escape the damnation of hell? He asked. Now, Christ is as utterly devastating of Phariseeism in the record of John chapter 8, although he admitted that his hearers were descendants of Abraham. He said they were spiritually of the devil, and he said to them, you are of your father the devil, and the lusts of your father you will do. He was a murderer from the beginning, and he abode not in the truth, because the truth is not in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. In this series of programs, I've showed you one lie after another coming out of the FDA and the CDC and the Congress of the United States. Just one lie after another. And these people killing 300,000 people a year. Now, that's just here in the United States. That doesn't count you people in South Korea, Brazil, Argentina, and the Cameroon or Egypt. It's going on worldwide. That isn't something that's just going on here in the United States. This vaccine thing with the thimerosal, and hell, we're shooting at black people in Africa. The stuff is manufactured here in the United States and shipped over to Africa, where we shoot it up into those little black babies over there. Why is that? And what's going on here? Why is it that the World Health Organization, for crying out loud, endorses thimerosal? And that's just the tip of the iceberg. We've got all kinds of other heavy metals over here, but I selected this one out because it is so obvious. I mean, it just stands right out there and gets right up in your face. Why would anybody in his right mind want to shoot a deadly toxic heavy metal like mercury into a two-month-old baby? Who would do such a wicked and evil thing? Well, you say, well, it's the mothers and the fathers of these children. Well, they're certainly complicit. But who was it that put that thimerosal in that vaccine, and why? It's a preservative. It doesn't have anything to do with the efficacy of the vaccine itself. You could take it out in the morning, and the worst thing that could happen is that the stuff would spoil on the shelves. But if we're that concerned about airliners, that because they don't have a plastic bracket to hold a hose in place, that we'd ground hundreds of airliners until that hose is properly secured, you know, for safety's sake, don't you think that common sense would tell us that we ought to take the thimerosal out of the vaccine, you know, just for a year or 6 months or something like that, and test it and see whether or not that's done it? Now, there's something afoot here. There's a missing link, but says the disinterested Christian. You know, Christ is as utterly devastating a Phariseeism in the record of John chapter 8, although he admitted that his hearers were descendants of Abraham. Descendants of Abraham. You know, Christians don't hear much about that in church, that we here in the Western Anglo-Saxon world are descendants of Abraham. But the disinterested Christian says, what has that got to do with us today? What a little bunch of Pharisees did 2,000 years ago is over and done with, they say. Well, the missing link in Christian understanding is best expressed on the subject of Pharisees by the Universal Jewish Encyclopedia, published in 1943. It says, the Jewish religion as it is today traces its descent without a break through all of the centuries from the Pharisees. Now, let me repeat that for all of you worldwide. You may not understand this, but Phariseeism was denounced by the founder of Christianity, Jesus Christ, the Messiah, the Son of God. He denounced the Pharisees. He called them everything but white men. He said that they were whited sepulchers. He said they were murderers and liars, that their father was the devil.
Now, here's the Jewish Encyclopedia. Now, let's put the connecting link together here. The Jewish religion as it is today traces its descent without a break through all of the centuries from the Pharisees. If I said something like that, you'd say, well, you anti-Semitic, no good, low down. Hell, I didn't say that. I'm not smart enough to figure that out. That came from the Jewish Encyclopedia. Go talk to those folks. Don't talk to me about it. I didn't write that. I'm a reporter, remember? I just researched it out, and I'm giving it to you. And I told you, it's in the 1943 Jewish Encyclopedia under the article, The Jewish Religion. Their leading ideas and methods found expression in a literature of enormous extent, of which a very great deal is still in existence. The Talmud is the largest, and it's the single most important piece of that literature. And the study of it is essential for any real understanding of Phariseeism. Now, concerning the Pharisees, the 1905 Jewish Encyclopedia tells us, with the destruction of the temple in 70 AD, the Sadducees disappeared altogether, leaving the regulation of all Jewish affairs in the hands of the Pharisees. Henceforth, Jewish life was regulated by the Pharisees. The whole history of Judaism was reconstructed from the Pharisaic point of view, and a new aspect was given in the Sanhedrin of the past. A new chain of tradition supplanted the older priestly tradition. So says Abbot 1, verse 1. Phariseeism shaped the character of Judaism and the life and thought of the Jew for all of the future. The scripture believes, and believers, or the scripture believers, it might be added, had accepted Christ as him foretold and no longer called themselves Jews, but they now called themselves Christians. And they were hounded. They were persecuted by the Pharisees as such. Now, the Babylonian Talmud is the sole authority, and you may ascertain by turning to top Jewish authorities today that the Babylonian Talmud, the written form of the tradition of the Pharisees, is the sole authority of the so-called Jewish religion. Rabbi Louis Finkelstein was chosen in 1937 by the Jewish communities of the whole world as one of the top 120 Jews who best represent a lamp of Judaism to the world. And he has long headed the Jewish Theological Seminary of America with branches in New York and Los Angeles. In The Pharisees, his two-volume work, Rabbi Finkelstein writes the following. Finkelstein said, quote, Phariseeism became Talmudism. Let me repeat that. Phariseeism, which was condemned by Jesus, became Talmudism. I'm going to underline that. This is written by one of the top 120 Jews in 1937. His name is Rabbi Finkelstein. He goes on to say, but the spirit of the ancient Pharisee survives unaltered. And when the Jew studies the Talmud, he is actually repeating the arguments used in the Palestinian academies, from Palestine to Babylonia, from Babylonia to North Africa, Italy, Spain, France, and Germany, from these to Poland, Russia, and Eastern Europe, generally ancient Phariseeism, or wherever ancient Phariseeism has wandered. In Rabbi Finkelstein's History of the Jews, he states the Talmud derives its authority from the position held by the ancient academies. The Pharisees, the teachers of those academies, both of Babylonia and of Palestine, were considered the rightful successors of the older Sanhedrin. At the present time, the Jewish people have no living central authority comparable to status to the ancient Sanhedrins or to the later academies. Therefore, any decision regarding the Jewish religion must be based upon the Talmud as the final resume of the teaching of those authorities when they existed. The Jews, Their History, Culture, and Religion, Volume 4, page 1332 of the Jewish Publication Society of America, printed in 1949. Okay, that's the authority. Now, the Talmud is the heart's blood of the Jewish faith. And that was a headline. It was the heading of the November 17th, 1959 installment of a best-selling book by Herman Wouk, spelled W-O-U-K, which ran serially in the New York Herald Tribune. To quote, he said, the Talmud is to this day the circulating heart's blood of the Jewish religion. Whatever laws, customs, or ceremonies we observe, whether we are Orthodox, Conservative, Reform, or merely spasmodic sentimentalists, we follow the Talmud. It is our common law. So here's a group of people somewhere out here in the world that follow a foreign and alien ideology to the Bible that Jesus himself condemned. Now, these people trace their lineage, their history, back to the Pharisees. The Pharisees are the people, remember, that put Christ to death. Now, why is the Talmud so often burned? And why is the Talmud kept so unknown to non-Jews? Why was there no English translation of the Talmud until 1934? And why, in European history, when the laws of the Talmud became commonly known to the Christians, was the Talmud burned over and over by order of the popes, excoriated by Martin Luther, denounced everywhere, and its followers exiled from one country after another down through the centuries? Why has that been going on? The Talmud's basic law is that only the Pharisee ranks as a man or human being. All other humans rank as animals, and the people are like an ass, slaves who are considered the property of the master. The attitude resulting from such teaching has been resented by the asses in all countries and through all the centuries. Such resentment, however, is always publicized as persecution of the Jews or anti-Semitic persecution. Moses, on the contrary, was most insistent upon having one law for the stranger as for the homeborn, and in teaching that the stranger must not be oppressed. And that comes in Exodus, or from Exodus 12:49, Leviticus 24:22, Numbers 9:14. In fact, Moses instructed us, "Love you therefore the stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt," in Deuteronomy 10:19. It was only the abominators that he warned against. So why then was Christ so scathing against the Pharisees? Was Christ just to the Pharisees? Was he unfair? Well, without some knowledge of the written form of the tradition of the Pharisees, the Babylonian Talmud, one is unable to intelligently judge whether Jesus Christ was fair and just in his acid denunciations of Phariseeism or not. One needs proof offered by the irrefutable exhibits from Jewish authorities herein that the Talmud reverses every one of the Ten Commandments, the teachings of Moses and of all the prophets, and it enshrines their opposites under a whited sepulcher, an Old Testament disguise for murder and all uncleanness. As Christ charged, murder of non-Pharisees is always permitted. Now this comes from the Talmud. Listen to this. Murder of non-Pharisees is always permitted. Theft, sodomy, incest, rape are all permitted, and the righteousness of grown men violating baby girls under three is a favorite topic for discussion in book after book of the Talmud. On the contrary, our Lord's treatment of little children is like the light of heaven compared to the filth of hell embraced by the Talmud. Now, the very word Babylon in the Bible is used to symbolize everything foul and pagan and wicked and evil. It is agreed by commentaries that the curses upon Babylon in Isaiah 13:14, or this is chapter 13 and 14 of Isaiah, and in Jeremiah 50 and chapter 51 refer not merely to the Babylonian Empire of ancient times, but to the one at the end of this age. Christ, in his revelation from the Spirit to John about 96 AD, said, "There are seven kings, five are fallen, and one is still in power, and the other is not yet come, that goeth into perdition." That's recorded in Revelation 17:10. Five world kingdoms had then come and gone. Egypt, Assyria, Babylonia, Medo-Persia, Greece. Rome was then in power over the whole known world, and Christ describes the coming world government as red or scarlet covered, as a behind-the-scenes or mystery power, and calls it Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. Notice that color red, and then think communist, red, drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. The 10 component parts of this world government which make war on the Lamb in this chapter, Revelation 17, as well as the prophecy of the satanic Antichrist, correspond with the prophecy of Daniel the prophet on the same 10-king anti-God power that we read about in Daniel 7, verse 24. But its complete defeat is chronicled in both places. Now let's take a look at the United Nations. There has been no one world power since the eastern capital or eastern leg of the Roman Empire, Constantinople, fell to the Turks in 1453, 1,000 years after Rome fell to Attila the Hun in 453 AD. Now, the seventh anti-God world government has been set up by the Babylonian Talmudists. The American Jewish yearbooks, put out yearly by world czars of money, industrial and political power, encompassing the Rothschilds, Lazard Fairs, Lehman's, Kuhn Loeb, and international bankers, in short, by the American Jewish Committee, have chronicled each and every step in their accomplishment, the creation of a vehicle for world power. The red takeover of Christian Russia was financed by Kuhn Loeb and Company, as we will see. Now, the United Nations, of over 100 nations centered in New York City, is a godless, prayerless assemblage. Its only religious emblem in Babylonian style is the nude, lewd statue of the sex god Zeus, the counterpart of Tammuz, Adonis, and in ancient times. He stands unspeakably modeled, arms outstretched, commanding the great entrance hall to the United Nations building in New York City today. Now, when the Greeks conquered the world, they spread the unifying propaganda that their sex god Zeus, who had raped his mother and his sister, was also the progenitor of all of the sex gods of the far-flung Greek world and their empire, and he represents unity in abomination and lust. Now, Babylon in the Bible is described as the mother of harlots, whereas Talmudic literature is one long pecan of praise for the very name Babylon and all that it means to Babylonian Talmudism today. It is the term of reproach in the New and the Old Testaments of the Bible. Note the foreword in the first English translation of the Babylonian Talmud. It is by the late chief rabbi of Great Britain, who, like Rabbi Finkelstein, was one of the 120 Jews chosen by the Kahilas of the world as best holding up the lamp of Judaism in 1937. Hertz starts out. He said, "The Talmud is the product of Palestine, the land of the Bible, and of Mesopotamia, the cradle of civilization. The beginnings of Talmudic literature date back to the time of the Babylonian exile in the 6th century before Christ. When 1,000 years later the Babylonian Talmud assumed final codification form in the year 500 after the Christian era, the Roman Western Empire had ceased to exist. Hertz extols the Babylonian exile, saying, "The Babylonian exile is a momentous period. During that exile, Israel found itself. It not only rediscovered the Torah and made it the rule of life." Now, what he means is that it was discovered how the Torah, or the Bible, could be used as a whited sepulcher for Babylonian degeneracy, as a bit of study will prove. Still, exulting over the Babylonian derivation of the Phariseeism, Rabbi Hertz continues, "When we came to the Babylonian genera, we are dealing with what most people understand when they speak or write of the Talmud, its birthplace, Babylonia. It was an autonomous Jewish center for a longer period than any other land, namely, from soon after 586 before the Christian era to the year 1040 after the Christian era, a total of 1,626 years. Now, you may note in the reproductions of Talmud pages that the word Gemara marks the augmentation of the rabbis. The decision being briefed as the Mishnah, endless twaddle, is summed up in the Shyster decision. Talmudic. Now, when a dash of French or Latin to create a facade of supposed higher learning or Gnosis, the communist Pharisee Sigmund Freud was able to sell his degenerate Talmudic sex ideas as scientific. That every baby girl supposedly suffers for sexual relations with her father, and every little boy wants to have sexual relations with his mother. This entire concept violates all rules of nature, all the rules of reality, and all the rules of reason, and it simply matches the depraved, incessant teaching of the Talmud about it being morally correct for grown men to violate baby girls under 3 years of age and to commit sodomy with little boys. Now this takes us up to the Palestinian Talmud. If someone comes up with the argument that there is a Palestinian Talmud that is nice, you may look up the fact that authorities state it was lost for 1,000 years, has missing parts, and lacks Gemara, and is only used for as a scholar's curiosity. And you may note the statement of Rabbi Hertz that the Palestinian Talmud was for many centuries almost forgotten by Jewry. Its legal decisions were at no time deemed to possess validity if opposed by the Babylonian Talmud. Hertz lauds the Rabbi Akiba. Akiba was the author of a collection of traditional laws, out of which the Mishnah actually grew, and he was the greatest among the rabbis of his own land of succeeding times. His keen and penetrating intellect enabled him to find a biblical basis for every provision of the oral law of the Talmud. So it's this melding of the Bible and the Talmud that Jesus condemned. He called them whitened sepulchers. Sounds good, but it's a counterfeit. All right, I got to give you a reminder here, if I can find the paper. Maybe I won't give you the reminder if I can't find it. But you can't. Now, what did I do with that? Here we go. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed to the website as well at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. This introduction comes from Arthur Koestler, K-O-S-T-L-E-R, in a book called The 13th Tribe. Now, Mr. Koestler is a Jew, the 13th tribe. Arthur, A-R-T-H-O-R, Arthur Kostler, K-O-S-T-L-E-R, in case you're looking for the source. Now, I'm citing directly from the Talmud here, out of Kostler's book, and he cites the Talmud here as his authority. And he gave us the cites, and I gave you that at the beginning of the program. Now let's take a look at some of the other new moon days. Isaiah, the saintly prophet of Christ, from about 760 to 698 BC, started right off in chapter 1 with his fulminations against Judah and Jerusalem. He said, "Ah, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, children that are corruptors. Except the Lord of hosts had left unto us a very small remnant, we should have been as Sodom and like unto Gomorrah. Bring no more your vain oblations, the new moons and Sabbaths, it is iniquity. Your new moons and your appointed feasts my soul hateth. I am weary to bear them." You'll see that in Isaiah 1, 4, 9, 13, and 14. Now there are two new moon days celebrated monthly in the synagogue. Rabbi Joshua Trittenberg, who has been listed in Who's Who in America and in Jewry, authored the book Jewish Magic and Superstition in Berman's Jewish Bookhouse, New York, 1939. And in it he states, "The pagan veneration of the new moon, which had by no means disappeared in biblical times, has no direct connection with the ceremony of blessing the new moon, which was outlined in the Talmud and is observed to this day. But certain superstitious practices have been associated with this rite, pointing to its continued occult importance in human affairs." Now, I want to underline that. Its continued occult, that is, satanic, witchcraft, importance in human affairs. In the first group are the practices of skipping three times at the close of the blessing and addressing the moon three times. "As I skip before you at you and do not reach you, so if others jump before me, they may not strike me. And of then thrice bidding one's neighbor, peace be unto you." The ceremony as well as the threefold repetitions are typical of magical arts. In the latter group are the practice of shaking one's clothes to cast off the spirits and the belief that one who performed the full rite need not fear death during the ensuing month. All right, so this Babylonian Talmud then aspires to witchcraft. Here's some trees. Another of the regular Babylonian Talmudic synagogue festivals today is the New Year for Trees. Its Talmudic name, I can't pronounce, under which title it is listed in the Babylonian Talmud, which is the synagogue calendar given in the American Jewish yearbooks, and it falls on the 15th of Shavuot, which in our calendar in 1964 is January 29th. Tree worship, one of the oldest forms of paganism and condemned in the Bible, is based on the belief that trees are inhabited by spirits. And the article New Year for Trees in the Jewish Encyclopedia of 1905 cites Gittin 57a of the Talmud on the custom of planting a cedar tree for every newborn male and a cypress tree for every female. When a marriage was about to take place, the trees were cut down and used as posts for the nuptial canopy. Here's what the Bible says on trees, still quoting. "The extent of its worship, the tree, is indicated also by the denunciations of the prophets. And a favorite phrase of theirs is describing idolatrous sexual practices. Practices as upon every hill and under every green tree," in Deuteronomy 12:2 and Jeremiah 2:20. As has been pointed out, the prophets were unable completely to suppress tree worship, which has survived in Palestine through all religious changes to the present day. Two kings in Judah were commended, Hezekiah and Josiah, because they cut down the groves. That's in 2 Kings 18, verse 4, and 2 Kings 23, verse 14. And God promised Moses that he would bless the people that he was leading into Palestine, provided that they drove out the pagan abominators, the Canaanites, saying, "You take heed, lest you make a covenant with the inhabitants, whither you go, lest it be for a snare. But you shall destroy their altars, you shall cut down their groves," that's in Exodus 34, 12, and 13, "and you shall utterly destroy all the places wherein the nations which you shall possess serve their gods, under every green tree, and you shall burn their groves with fire," in Deuteronomy 12, verses 2 and 3, and in Deuteronomy 7, verse 5, etc. And it repeats the same command. This was about 1450 B.C. So this is the exact opposite, then. What we see here in the Talmud is the exact opposite of the Bible. And as we go through here, time after time, Kostler points this out. Remember, this is Arthur Kostler, the 13th tribe. He can say this because he's a Jew. If I said this, you'd say, "Well, Gordon, you're anti-Semitic. You're anti-Jewish." And I'm a reporter, remember? And I said, there's got to be some deeper reason for these heavy metals and these poisons to be put into our food, to be put into our medicines, vaccines, and so on. That's killing 300,000 people a year by their own admission. Now, we're not killing 300,000 people a year in our airliners, and yet we enforce airline regulations just to be on the safe side. And yet we ignore the 300,000 people that are dying every year from these vaccines and the autism and the sickness and diseases that are caused by these common poisons, such as chlorine in our water supplies and fluoride, mercury fillings in our head, mercury thimerosal in your vaccines, aluminum in your salt and aspirin and baking powder. This isn't ignorance. This isn't accidental. This is direct. intentional, purposeful. There's a reason behind it. There's somebody out here that hates you with a purple passion and wants to kill you and is in the process of doing just exactly that. All right, now there's a little bit more here to the story. Let me flip over a couple pages here and we get to the United Nations here. At least I think I can. Now, who says that socialism is Jewish? Socialism, remember we're talking about that, the opposite, the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto is socialism. And we have various names. You know, we call it fascism or capitalism or Nazism or socialism. You know, we hang these labels on this practice of the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, which are the exact opposite to the 10 commandments. Now, here in America, we used to practice the 10 commandments. And when we did that, we did not have the kinds of poisonings going on that we have today. This has developed over the past 100 years. We had gold and silver coin. We did not have irredeemable paper money that was driving us to bankruptcy. When we practiced, thou shalt not steal, and we practiced, you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag, we had gold and silver coin issued by our government. Then we created this Federal Reserve Bank, Federal Reserve System. We gave ourselves irredeemable paper money, and we've been voting for. I mean, we voted for Clinton. We voted for Bush. We voted for Eisenhower and Franklin D. Roosevelt. Now, you could sit there and say, well, we didn't know Roosevelt was going to take our gold away. Well, you figured it out by 1936, didn't you? And you voted him back in four times. Hadn't you figured out that your gold had been taken away from you by the time Harry Truman or Dwight Eisenhower had become president? Oh, no. Now, you can't sit there and say, well, it was done to me. You people have been out there voting. I've pointed this out a time or two. I said, you know, if voting for Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton or John McCain or somebody else now is going to solve your problem, if voting was the solution to your problem, then voting would have prevented the problem from occurring in the first place, wouldn't it? And since voting didn't prevent the problem, what makes you think that voting is going to cure the problem? Now, you can look in the Bible from Genesis to Revelation, and you're not going to find any voting in the Bible. You're not going to find democracy there. And that's because God is not a Democrat. And he's not the author of democracy. Not at all. Just as an aside. So let's take a look at socialism here. It may be seen by the attached photostats that for Jewish eyes, Jewry boasts of having invented and run socialism, communism from the very beginning. Glance at the top Jewish authorities whose words are produced on pages 26 through 28 herein. First of all, number one, socialism was originated by Jews, and today Jews play a leading role in its spread and interpretation. Two, repeats the same idea. Three, says the 1905 Jewish Encyclopedia, Jews have been prominently identified with the socialist movement from its very inception. And four, the Jew, Ferdinand LaSalle, founded the great German Socialist Party. The Jew, Karl Marx, wrote, quote, the Bible of modern socialism, exhibiting his inherent Talmudic bent. And five, Jews filling Russian universities made them hotbeds of socialistic agitation and revolution. These swarmed to America, trained the Jewish masses, making them the peddlers of socialism. The election of the first socialist mayor in the United States is cited as a noble example of the proselytizing work of Russian Jewish socialists. And eight, leaders of the Bolshevik Russian Revolution were Jews. Nine, the Kerensky socialist government. And ten, the Bolshevik alike turned the Jewish masters loose on Russia. 11, the actual Jewish socialist movement began in Russia. 12, Zionism adopted socialism. 13, the unions were founded by Jews. 14, Jewish control over the socialist Second International is evident today. 15, communist triumph in Russia stimulated socialism everywhere. 16, Jewish leadership of Red Party is in all countries cited. 17, scientific socialism originated in the combination of Jewish messianic feeling with German philosophy and Marx and LaSalle. Now check these statements with the photostats from the Universal Jewish Encyclopedia, published in 1943, and the Jewish Encyclopedia of 1905. And the Jewish Publications Society book, Jewish Contributions to Civilization, the brochure issued by the Union of American Hebrew Congregations and the Central Conference of American Rabbis. All right, so I'm going to underline that. Now remember, this comes from Arthur Koestler in the 13th tribe. He's an authority, he's a Jew. And he's a whistleblower. So what he's telling us here is that there's a reason why you have 300,000 deaths a year committed by your medical establishment. And why it is that the FDA and the CDC and the Congress of the United States are powerless to do anything about it, and that's because they're complicit with it. You know, in the final analysis, we have to ask ourselves, who in his right mind would put mercury into a two-month-old baby's vaccination? And the answer is, the Talmudic Pharisees would. They hate you. They want to kill you. They're in the process of doing that. And God himself in 2 Chronicles 7:14 said, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Now, combine that with Deuteronomy chapter 28. This is the penal clause chapter, boys and girls. Deuteronomy, D-U-T, chapter 28. Combine that with Leviticus, write this down, Leviticus chapter 26, and there's where our God, our Creator, said, you know, I'm going to unleash upon you people a terror. I'm going to punish you. Boys and girls, 300,000 people a year being killed is a punishment. That's not a blessing. That's not a blessing at all. Autism is not a blessing, boys and girls. It is a curse. That is a curse. Chloride or chlorine and fluoride in your drinking water is not a blessing to you, boys and girls. That's a curse. Now, that's been sold to you as a health measure, as a health provision. Hey, that's good for our health. Excuse me. Excuse me. Come over to my house for coffee and let me offer you cream and sugar and a little arsenic for your coffee. I will offer you no more than the Environmental Protection Agency's daily dose of arsenic. You want to put that in your coffee? I will offer to put into your coffee the prescribed amount of arsenic. I mean, you know, the daily safe level, 2 milligrams. Who in his right mind would want to do that? Now, Christ's identification and Babylon the Great. No, Babylon is the very symbol of moral filth in the whole Old Testament. But those who call themselves people of the book exalted in every way. Phariseeism today lives by the Babylonian calendar, keeps the Babylonian festivals, the Feast of Tammuz, and enshrines its anti-biblical immorality, including sodomy and burning children to Moloch, necromancy, etc. Have you noticed that we now have the Bible taken out of our public schools? That prayer is taken out of our public schools? And where did we get the idea of public school anyway? That didn't come from the Bible. God instructed us to educate our children at home, in homeschool, but we don't do that. Now listen, these people also wrote us the protocols. To each act of opposition, we must be in a position to respond by bringing on war through the neighbors of any country that dares to oppose us. And if these neighbors should plan to stand collectively against us, we must let loose a world war. We've had two of those, and we have one more coming up. People of all opinions and all doctrines are at our service. Restorers of monarchy, demagogues, socialists, communists, and other utopians. We have put them all to work. And every one of them, from his point of view, is undermining the last remnant of authority and is trying to overthrow all existing order. All of the governments have been tormented by these actions. But we will not give them peace until they recognize our super government. That's the ninth protocol. When we introduced the poison of liberalism into the government organism, its entire political complexion changed. Boys and girls, the CDC, the Congress, and the FDA have been poisoned by liberalism. In order not to destroy prematurely the Gentile institutions, we have laid our efficient hands upon them and rasped the springs of their mechanism. They were formerly in strict and just order, but we have replaced them with a liberal, disorganized, and arbitrary administration. Boys and girls, the putting of aluminum into your baking powder, your salt, aspirin, and foodstuffs is an arbitrary administration. We have tampered with jurisprudence, the franchise, the press, freedom of the person, and most important of all, education and culture, the cornerstone of free existence. And we have misled, we have stupefied, we have demoralized the youth of the Gentiles by means of education and principles and theories that are patently false to us, but which we have inspired. Principles, patently false to us. Putting thimerosal into your vaccines? Does that make sense? Above existing laws without actual change, but by distorting them through contradictory interpretations, we have created something stupendous in the way of results. I've demonstrated to you all week this very practice of contradictory interpretations. Oh, well, we just don't know whether thimerosal in the vaccines is a connecting link with autism. I mean, you've got to be brain dead to follow that kind of logic. Contradictory interpretations. Listen to this on property. We shall soon begin to establish huge monopolies and colossal reservoirs of wealth upon which even the big Gentile properties will be dependent to such an extent that they will all fall together with the government credit on the day following the political catastrophe. The economists here present must carefully weigh the significance of this combination, and we must develop by every means the importance of our super government, representing it as the protector and the benefactor of all who voluntarily submit to us. We will force up wages, which, however, will be of no benefit to workers, for at the same time we will cause a rise in the prices of prime necessities. Have you been watching the price of gasoline, boys and girls, and the price of food? This is coming to pass right in front of your eyeballs. It's being reported to you every night by Katie Couric and Brian Williams and Charlie Gibson. We will force up wages, which, however, will be of no benefit to workers, for at the same time we will cause a rise in the prices of prime necessities, pretending that this is due to a decline of agriculture and cattle raising. Oh my God, we're having crop failures. We will also artfully and deeply undermine the sources of production by instilling in the workmen ideas of anarchy and encourage them in the use of alcohol, at the same time taking measures to drive all of the intellectual forces of the Gentiles from the land. Intellectual forces. Anybody that's got a brain left that can think will be driven out. To wear everyone out by dissension, animosity, feud, famine, inoculations of diseases, and want, until the Gentiles see no other way of escape except an appeal to our money and our power. Boys and girls, inoculation of diseases is one of the means by which These Pharisees have intended and have in fact accomplished their end goal of your destruction. It is for this reason that we must undermine faith, eradicate from the minds of the Gentiles the very principles of God and soul, and replace these conceptions by mathematical calculations and material desires. Have you taken a look at your universities? Have you taken a look at your own education? You believe in evolution. You believe in the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. You don't believe in the 10 commandments and of Moses and God. They have succeeded beyond their wildest expectation. We will so wear out and exhaust the Gentiles by all of this that they will be compelled to offer us an international authority, we call that the United Nations, which by its position will enable us to absorb without disturbance all of the governmental forces of the world and thus form a super government. Here comes the New World Order, boys and girls. This was spelled out in 1884, these protocols. Now remember that this book is written by Arthur Koestler, K-O-S-T-L-E-R, Arthur Koestler. The 13th Tribe is the title, 13th Tribe. Hey, it's not an accident that we're being poisoned. It's not an accident that we have the World Health Organization recommending thimerosal in your vaccines. It's not an accident that you're being vaccinated in the first place. It's a means to an end. It's a means to super world government. It's a means to the total destruction of Christianity. The Anglo-Saxon white man must be destroyed, and he's in the process of being destroyed. In fact, our God himself said in 2 Chronicles 7:14, don't forget it, he said, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. It's our ignorance that's destroying us. Somebody needed to tell you, so I thought I'd be the one. I'd just stand up and say, hey, let me tell you where this is coming from, boys and girls, and here's where it's headed. Hey, we're about out of time again. I'm going to have to leave it right about here and remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week in more than 112 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. And remember that the Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. And we do it 7 days a week. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.